In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, he's figuring it out. Traveler, world traveler.
I know. You bouncing around.
Girl, I'm trying to make that dollar. trying to get my health because of health insurance. This is adulting, ladies and gentlemen.
It really is. Okay? And related to our topic of today's pod.
For real. Wait, so we all know that adage, money can't buy happiness. But I heard like a spin on it that had me on the ground earlier.
Okay, well, you have to share with the class.
Okay, so money can't buy you happiness, but I'd rather cry in a Jaguar. Girl, me too. Me the fuck too.
I mean, Jaguars are kind of ugly, but I understand the sentiment.
Jaguars are ugly?
Yeah, I don't know. They're like squished looking. I don't know. I like a small car, but it's kind of, I don't know.
But I feel like you don't hear about Jaguars, and like you hear about a Beamer, a BMW, mm-hmm. you hear about Mercedes, but you don't hear about Jaguars. That means that shit is rare. Okay. That means that is fancy.
I mean, obviously you don't live in Los Angeles because it feels like everybody has a Jag here. I don't.
Okay. Let's miss Los Angeles over here.
Okay, wait, but where did you hear this phrase from?
A friend of mine, I thought it was so clever. He completely did not make it up. It's not original. It turns out that it comes from the first time it was uttered was a French playwright named Francois Sagan. So like, you know, oui, haw, haw, bitch. I'm right with you. I'm right with you, Francois. He stole it, but you know.
But as they say, the best artists steal. That's so true. Correct?
Well, because that is the adage, and I steal your shit all the time.
Do you?
I do. I mean, because like, listen, you're so quick. I say this on the pod all the time. You're so quick. You're so funny. You're so cute. You're so pretty. But literally, the internet was a mistake is one of my favorite phrases.
I don't know if that was me. That's the collective consciousness speaking through me. I doubt I'm the first person to say that one.
Well, my other thing that, and I do not give you credit for this, but it also kills is, I overstand.
I didn't make that one up either.
Thief and Francesca over here. Just thievery, okay?
I got that. I shout out to my friend Suzanne, who you met, who was longtime mm-hmm. internet bestie, and she is an acting teacher. But I steal ones from you all the time. My favorite Delon-isms are moreover.
I feel like I stole that from Shakespeare, but yep.
Did you? Okay, another one is by the by.
I don't know where I got that one either.
Here's one that I know is Shakespeare, but I will credit to you. And there's the rub. You love to say that one.
You know, I really do. And I make fun of people for that phrase. At the end of the day. Oh my God.
Ooh, I do that one too.
It is so overused. I feel so lazy, but and there's the rub in the same way you use, at the end of the day.
You know, another philosopher once said, more money, more problems. I say, Christopher, Biggie Smalls walking, give me the problems. I'll take them.
Okay. More money, more square footage. Okay. Let's go big. Let's go wide. Let's go deep.
I'm sorry. Are we still talking about real estate?
Mm-hmm. Sure, that too. But, you know, your boy is tired of living in a New York City shoebox. I will say that much.
Okay, but let's try to riff on some of these money can't buy you happiness, because I feel like we can punch this up. Money can't buy you happiness, but I've never met a sad bitch with an indoor pool.
Tell me about it. Wait. Money can't buy you happiness, but paying my student loans off would make me content as fuck.
Listen, speak that into existence. Fuck Sally Mae.
Joe Biden who?
Money can't buy you happiness, but if at first you don't succeed, bye bye again.
Yes, yes.
She's a writer.
She's a writer. Money can't buy you happiness, but bitch, I'm already depressed. The only way is up, okay?
Listen, that's the real truth. Money can't buy you happiness, but it could fix the housing crisis.
Ooh,
hello?
Snaps to all of that. Money can't buy you happiness, but Bill Gates and Oprah and Jeff Bezos and Rihanna and Jay-Z and Elon Musk and all of them billionaire motherfuckers seem really, really okay, though. They
Listen,
seem fine.
$1 billion? Who needs $1 billion?
For real. I mean, I don't need $1 billion, but, you know.
But I'll take it.
wait. No.
Listen. wait.
I hate you for that.
Let me fix it.
Oh my gosh. Hello and welcome back to Let Me Fix It, the podcast that says, no, money can't buy you love, but girls, sex work is work too, and I'm a lonely motherfucker. I'm DeLon Grant.
I'm Francesca Ramsey, and this is Let Me Fix It, the podcast that says, hey, society, we have notes. And today we are talking about money, and you are probably thinking, that's an easy fix, just give me more of it. You are not wrong. But more specifically, we are going to talk about affluenza, this stupid idea that was thrust in the cultural consciousness a decade ago and has plagued us ever since. Also, word nerd, affluenza is a portmanteau, DeLon. Ooh. It is a blend of affluence and influenza.
You better have the callback, though. It sure is. Webster's Oxford Dictionary, you and your dictionaries, if you're listening, you need to start sponsoring Let Me Fix It, because we'd be over here working the English language, okay? Just to start in on this affluenza, the first time I feel like I ever heard about it was surrounding the events of that teenager who used affluenza as a defense for drunk driving and killing like 4 people.
That is correct. That's the first time I heard it too. That was in 2013. 16-year-old Ethan Couch killed 4 people in a drunk driving accident, and his legal defense was that his family's wealth led him to being irresponsible enough to get behind the wheel of a car drunk, as if brokies don't drink and drive. Because
talk
guess
about
what?
It.
They do. Okay.
Like,
people of all backgrounds make those bad decisions. But before he and his lawyer hijacked the phrase, affluenza generally meant a malaise about materialism. Actually, PBS did a documentary unpacking it in the late 1990s, and there is this melodramatic scene from one of the episodes. We will put a link in the show notes if you want to watch it, where this rich lady is at the doctor's office and she is getting diagnosed with affluenza as if it's an actual disease.
There's nothing physically wrong with you.
Then why do I feel so awful, so bloated and sluggish? Nothing gives me joy anymore. Not the house, the car, the clothes, the raise. Nothing. Doctor, I'm frightened. Well, do something. Can't you give me a pill?
There's no pill for what's wrong with you. I'm afraid you're suffering from affluenza.
Oh, my God. Why me? Is it fatal?
It's catastrophic. It's the new epidemic.
Well, there is a cure, isn't there?
Possibly.
Affluenza is a major disease. There's no question about it.
And many people suffer from it, but very few people are aware that that's what they're suffering from.
It's so ridiculous. It's like beyond melodramatic. I think my favorite part of it is her saying, nothing brings me joy anymore. Not the house, the car, the clothes, the race. I feel so sluggish.
Then give it away, bitch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Girl, really, like, there is a charity down the street. It's called the fucking, you know, the Salvation Army. Give your shit away.
Hello.
It feels like such a bad sketch.
It really, really does. And what kills me is that the melodrama is they have this real doctor, quote unquote, and a real psychologist claiming that affluenza is a real affliction. And as far as I'm concerned, it is pseudoscience bullshit.
100%. And I think we have to do some unpacking of our own, because it feels like there's like 2 definitions, pre-Ethan Coach and post-Ethan Coach. So let's dive in and figure out what these adjacent definitions are. Affluenza, let me fix it. So in that documentary you mentioned, Fran, that PBS aired on affluenza, it defines affluenza as the unfulfilled feeling resulting from efforts to keep up with the Joneses. This is really interesting. I did not know where this phrase came from.
I didn't know until we started working on this episode.
I know. So the phrase originates with the 1913 comic strip Keeping Up with the Joneses. The strip ran until 1940 in the New York World and various other newspapers. The strip depicts the social climbing McGinnis family who struggled to keep up with their neighbors, the aforementioned Joneses of the title. The Joneses were unseen characters throughout the strip's run, often spoken about but never shown.
That's a mind fuck. You trying to keep up with them and I don't know what those bitches look like. Who listen, are they?
Listen, they're like this elusive thing, capitalism, right? You can't touch it. You can't feel
the
it, but
layers.
It's there.
It's okay. A comic, but it's, you know, it's a reflection of our need to be better, capitalism, yada, yada, yada.
And for who, for why? You can't even see them, right? The other part of this PBS definition of affluenza is they definitely call it an epidemic of stress, overwork, and indebtedness in the pursuit of the American dream, which, I mean, capitalism, that's going to be my running thing throughout the episode. It feels that way, right?
It's
real. Definitely feel that, for real.
Yeah.
Another way they defined it is, this is rubs me, a psychological dysfunction caused by the obsessive and competitive pursuit for more money, more material items, and more power. That is America in itself, but it rubs me because the psychological dysfunction is the part of it that, I mean, it's not, is it a dysfunction? I don't know.
Well, I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about when this woman is at the doctor. It's like this idea that we are looking at wealth as something like, oh, poor you. This is so hard for you.
Right.
Like you, you made a choice, you know, and people that have extreme wealth more oftentimes than not had to take advantage of somebody else in order to get there.
Ooh,
right. Like there are no moral billionaires. You become a billionaire because you cut some corners with some people. You chose not to pay some people. And
or you
now,
had resources to resources to make more money. Right.
Hello. And there are other people who are unable to do that. So, you know, it is really interesting that this word has taken on this life of its own, as seen with Ethan Couch. So before he used it as a legal defense, affluenza was generally accepted as a psychological disease affecting wealthy people, giving them feelings of guilt, lack of motivation, and social isolation. Basically, I'm spoiled and rich and wasn't taught the consequences of my actions. Woe is me.
I mean, listen, I don't have no sympathy for it. Listen, rich people are people too. I totally get that. But get a therapist. Like
you can afford one.
You know what I'm saying? You can go to the doctor like that lady did and ask, get a pill, you know? The thing that pisses me off about that Ethan kid, though, claiming affluenza as a defense is that it worked. He killed 4 people and only got 10 years probation.
All right, so let's talk about this criminal. In 2013, 16-year-old Ethan Couch was drunk, high, and driving on a restricted license. He said, I gotta do the big 3. Speeding through a residential neighborhood when he lost control of his vehicle and hit a group of people assisting another driver who had broken down on the side of the road. Okay, so someone's being a good Samaritan.
Right.
And they lost their lives over this idiot. He killed 4 people and injured 9 others. 2 people driving with him in his vehicle had serious injuries, including one of them being paralyzed from the neck down.
Damn, man. I mean, and he, what's nuts to me is he walked away. He literally walked away from the accident with his legs.
I had to look this up because it always blows my mind that drunk drivers almost always survive the crashes while killing innocent people. There is
That's
a reason
nuts.
Behind this, okay? Here is an infuriating factoid, per DeLon's favorite word. The reason being that intoxicated people are limp, thus their muscles are relaxed and their reaction times are slowed. So because of this, the drunk divers do not typically tense up during an accident, which means they are creating less resistance.
So like you literally your foot just can't press down on the brake fast enough or turn the wheel fast
enough. It's something about your body. It's because you are delayed in your reaction. I think there's something about tensing up your body that makes you more likely to sustain injuries while the drunk person is kind of like flopping around with like a fish. And that's how they survive.
That's crazy. I didn't understand that. That's nuts. So it's just like your body's just going with the inertia.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you're That's crazy, man.
I know. And I, not that that's going to help you if you're ever in an accident, because truly it happens so fast, but like now I'm going to, anytime I'm in an accident, I'm just going to try and like flop and hopefully
just go with it. Oh God. I mean, never going to be in an accident. You're never going to be in an accident.
But I don't want to put that out into the world, but it is wild. Like the universe is so fucked up in that way. Like the person who's responsible gets to walk away.
I know. And to your point about him being drunk and high, his Ethan Couch's alcohol level was 3 times the legal limit. Mm-mm. He had stolen his dad's car. He had just stolen some beer for Walmart. If you are rich.
Okay, you rich.
This is what I'm saying. If you have money, I mean, he was 16, so he had to steal it.
But he had a credit card from his mommy and daddy. There is no reason for him to be in Walmart stealing.
Okay, and or I bet you the parents had a full bar in the basement.
You know the type.
You know, exactly. I'm
a cool mom.
You
guys can drink here as long as you just put your keys in this bowl and we're going to put
Amy
it in the
pulled
freezer.
It from Mean Girls.
I knew that mom when I was in high school.
Wait, why put it in the freezer?
Because you'd put the keys in a bowl and put water in the bowl, put the bowl in the freezer, and then it would be a block of ice so you couldn't get your keys out. Can you tell I went to school with rich people with cool parents?
keys in the bowl is crazy, but the hack of like keeping them, freezing them.
So that it's a block of ice and no one can take their keys.
I mean, I guess due diligence, but you know.
I mean, look, it kept us from getting into trouble. Okay. And I would think that homeboy, if he's going to claim that being rich is what got him in the situation, he don't have a driver.
Yo, I mean, well, somebody. I also like the other thing that about this case that really is nuts is the judge. So the Honorable Gene Hudson Boyd said probation will do after killing 4 people, paralyzing another one. Like that, what? That doesn't make sense. The excuse that she gave around sentencing him is that she thought he would get better rehabilitation at an inpatient facility than, you know, at youth detention, which is like,
we're gonna get into that, because that's not what happened.
Right? In the end.
Right. Because what ended up happening is after that bullshit ass sentence, he was caught not 2 years later playing beer pong at a party, which was in violation of his probation. So his probation officer goes looking for him after this beer pong incident. And Ethan and his mommy flee to Mexico to avoid going to jail. They were caught in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. His mom was charged with money laundering and preventing the capture of a fugitive. And after all of that, killing 4 people, paralyzing another, violating his probation, going on the run, he was only sentenced to 2 years in prison. He was released in 2018, only to be arrested again in 2020 you guessed it, violating his probation. How many chances does this rich motherfucker need to terrorize our streets? And also his family.
Yo.
His father was accused in 2014 of falsely identifying himself as a police officer. After the police responded to a disturbance at his home, he was also accused of choking his girlfriend during a dispute. What is going on in the Couch household?
Okay. I feel like his parents should have been arrested after he killed
them. They
really should. Because clearly this is like their influence.
Well, and especially a 16-year-old driving under the influence on a suspended license. The parents are at fault for that.
You know what? Oh, to be rich and white in America. Affluenza really means you're rich and you think the law doesn't apply to you.
I mean, the way I see it, it really doesn't. I mean, especially if you're rich and famous. Let's talk about Donald Trump. Out here, free as a bird.
Okay.
Sexually assaulting women, bragging about it, lying on his taxes, trying to steal an election, causing an insurrection. Now I'm rapping. Look what you did to me.
I only laugh because it's ridiculous.
It's like ridiculous.
His rap sheet is so fucking long, and he's out here flying across the country on our tax dollars now.
And selling merch with his mugshot on it. But here's the thing. It's not just him, right? Especially if you are a celebrity, especially if you're wealthy. Lindsay Lohan, DUI charges.
Yep.
Paris Hilton, DUI. Felicity Hoffman, Lori Loughlin, and that college admissions scandal.
They really thought they weren't going to get caught for that.
And then it was was like a slap on the wrist.
I know. A month in jail or something?
And then here's the thing, too. So we cannot ignore how, like, racial privilege plays into this.
Talk about
it. But it also happens, unfortunately, to people of color, black people. Let's talk about O.J. Simpson. Let's talk about Chris Brown. Your money can absolutely protect you from facing consequences in this country. And it's wild that now people are, you know, off the strength of this Ethan Couch case, able to say, it's hard being rich. It's hard for me to obey the law.
Yeah, you make such a good point because, again, resources. Like, you have resources to even get you the legal teams that have enough of experience and enough defense.
Speak on it.
You know what I mean? Enough education.
How many people are sitting in jail and have not even been convicted of a crime yet? They are just waiting to go to court.
Because they don't have bail money.
Because they don't have bail money. The fucking bail bonds thing is nuts to me.
And we're still trying to reform that. But
you can kill someone and then pay a fee and be able to walk around freely while you await trial. Meanwhile, if you get caught with a little bit of weed or a little shoplifting or something of that nature, and again, it's the, you know, you have to have the complexion for protection, as they say.
Talk about it.
Because, you know, the white girlies out here will be doing drugs and getting DUIs, and they'll be walking out in these streets free as a bird. But let it be a poor black or brown person.
I heard a girl talk about getting caught with coke by a police officer and being let go. And I was like, and looked at me like, isn't that crazy? And I was like, it is fucking crazy because my black ass would be under the jail.
Listen, I had an experience like that recently where I was at a party and this girl was telling the hilarious story of her getting caught drunk driving and how she got out of it. And all I could think was, yeah, you're white. Like, this is not a funny story. You should take this to your grave. You would not be able to waterboard that story out of me. I would not tell that to people as if it was a funny life anecdote.
Right.
When other people are in jail for way, way, way less.
Well, and it's understanding, it's the empathy factor for me. It's understanding that there are other people in the world that have, that don't have the privilege, don't have the resources, again, that you have. One of the things I want to turn back to, that judge who I roll my eyes so hard at, because talk about privilege, talk about resources and money. 9 years before she handed down that offensively lenient sentence to Ethan Couch, the same judge sentenced another 16-year-old from a poor family to 20 years in prison for killing someone with a car. So he was drunk driving, killed somebody, and she was like, oh, you get 20. Oh, I couldn't possibly put this little rich white boy in prison. Like, what the fuck? That makes no sense.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, I do think there should be consequences, right?
Yes,
like,
for everybody.
We're not saying, like, at he should have gotten out too, right? And this is something that I'm excited for us to talk a little bit more about, is because there's this idea of, like, jail is supposed to reform people, but the reality is that's not what prison does at all. Like,
well, and that's not how we use it. We use it as it's punitive, right? And
absolutely,
it should be somewhat punitive, but don't tell me it's rehabilitation.
It's never been,
you know?
No, not at all. And do not get me started on the criminal injustice of the criminal justice system in this country. But I will say, if we're going to have a debate about someone's affluence being such a hindrance in life that they are blinded from the consequences of their actions and then shielded from accountability because of affluenza, then we damn sure better be talking about broke Luenza or poor Luenza. It doesn't really walk
on it.
Doesn't really roll off the tongue. But I also am trying poor-demic, like poor pandemic. And then I did find this. I don't like this one either. Locashism is a term coined by the 2016 HuffPost article, described it as the opposite of affluenza. It refers to a condition in which people are trapped in a cycle of poverty and make decisions that affect their lives negatively without realizing the potential consequences. And this is so fucking real. People who are pushed to their breaking point are going to do things that potentially break the law in order to keep themselves self-sufficient. And they are always punished for it. Nobody says, like, wait, why did you steal the Pampers, mama?
Right.
Obviously, you in dire straits.
Why did you send your kid to that school district that isn't theirs and you got arrested and went to jail for 3 months? I still can't get over that for your kid's education. But to your point, friend, there are millions of people in prison right now suffering from poor Luenza or low cashism. I really like that definition of the Huntington Post.
The word needs a little work. But
It does.
But the essence is there.
Right. But that's why drug dealers and thieves are out here slinging and stealing to cure that shit. And you don't see the consequences because the potential consequences don't outweigh your current reality, right? Mm-hmm. And again, we're not condoning criminal behavior here, but to your point, if we're doling out empathy and we're going to blame having too much money for causing someone's malaise and a psychological disorder, let's talk about the psychological disorder of being poor. Those suffering from affluenza have so much guilt for having too much money that they act out. Well, the affluenza afflicted are the previously mentioned Joneses, and the poor are out here trying to keep up with y'all, okay?
Listen, can we start a charity for us? Those affected by the Joneses.
Okay.
Have you been Jonesed?
Not a verb. Wait, have you been Jonesed lately? What have the Joneses done to you lately?
Listen, I need a class action lawsuit. I'm skipping ahead to the fix.
Oh, you are so dumb.
Listen, it's so true. And I think, you know, we jokingly talk about being quote unquote poor. And some people think that only means you cannot eat, you don't have a place to live. But the reality is there is diversity in being poor. There are people who might not be homeless, but they live in a food desert. Mm-hmm. There are people who, you know, work a full-time job, but still not can't pay rent or
Talk
are choosing
it.
Not to eat so their child can eat, you know, and are struggling to find affordable housing and are living paycheck to paycheck. Those people are still qualified as poor.
And the shame around those things, you know, I grew up poor and on welfare. I mean, I'm talking like food stamps and all. You remember that Bone Thugs and Harmony song? Wake up, wake up. That was my youth. And now I know that like that the shame around it is completely misplaced. But that was my life. And that the shame was immense. I want to pivot and ask you, because now we're both living middle class lives, but you grew up fairly middle class, adjacent to like not rich, but like the wealthy.
Oh, yeah. So I grew up very middle class, but my parents, as an only child, I'm so thankful that my parents were able to stretch a dollar to give me experiences that I don't think they could have given me if I had had siblings. But it really wasn't until I got to high school, because I went to a private Catholic school, and everybody was kind of like around the same financial background. But when I got to high school, I went to a performing arts high school where you had to audition to get in. And a lot of wealthy people sent their kids there because it was free. And they were like, I can get a good education for my kid without paying private school prices. And I went to school with some kids who had, I'm talking indoor movie theaters, indoor tennis court.
What?
Yes, an indoor tennis court.
See, this is
court.
How rich people stay rich, because they find loopholes. They're like, I'm going to send a free school and keep my money.
Well, I remember a classmate of mine wrecking his car on the way to school and his parents bringing another car to school on a flatbed truck and delivering it for him in the parking lot. I swear to God. It was bizarre. And then there was also a huge scandal at my school because our principal was also very wealthy, lived on Palm Beach. As you may know, Palm Beach is where Mar-a-Lago is, Donald Trump, Worth Avenue. I mean, just super, super
Worth
rich.
Worth Avenue.
Yes. And I'm west of Palm Beach, so don't get it twisted. Okay.
Okay,
I can
right.
see Palm Beach, but I'm not from there. Okay. They are literally
waves,
on the other side of the track.
Palm Beach.
I'm doing the Kamala Harris rave. Oh, I see you over there. Okay. So our principal also lived in Palm Beach, and another student's parents were going out of town and asked her to house sit. Okay. This immediately conflict of interest. Why is our principal house sitting for a student? A student who was a bad student and had a huge party while she was house sitting. People were drinking at this house. I mean, having the time of their lives. And she ended up losing her job over this. And he stayed at the school. He was such a bad student, was always getting into shit. And once again, it was that wealth, his whiteness, but also his parents' wealth that protected him. Last one I'll tell you. There was a girl at our school, very wealthy, who we were, I guess people were playing pranks on our health teacher, and she put a stink bomb in the teacher's mug and drank it, and it was like a whole thing. And instead of getting suspended, the next year we had a new wing on the school with her last name on it.
Shut the fucking door right now.
We had a new, our school had been under construction. And then suddenly it was like, and now it's finished.
There's a brand new theater.
There's a brand new theater with that bitch's last name on it. She should have been expelled, and she was not. And
that's crazy, man. That's, I mean, infuriating.
I will say, when I was younger, I wasn't jealous, but I did think like, wow, so many of my friends have cool parents, quote unquote, often wealthy parents who, like that Amy Poehler Mean Girls character, are trying to be their kid's friend more than their parent.
I just want you to know, if you need anything, don't be shy, okay? There are no rules in this house. I'm not like a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. Right, Regina?
Please stop talking.
And I will say now, as an adult, many of those kids that had cool parents have struggled to really figure out what they want to do in life. And I surmise it comes from having so much privilege that they don't have like that drive, that hunger. Everything's been given to you. You don't even have to work hard for anything. And so in that respect, maybe affluenza is real.
Well, you know, listen, let's assume that it is real because we're talking about it. But I do think when we give the doctor, the psychologist, validity to it by saying it's a defense against the thing.
No.
You know, in terms of the law, that's where you lose me, because where's accountability otherwise, right? You can do anything and say, oh, God, I had so much money growing up and my parents weren't around. Well, listen, I didn't grow up with a dad. So what if I go, you know what I mean? Like,
right. You don't get to use that as a defense.
And it's not like the trauma Olympics or whatever. It's not tit for tat. It's not about whataboutism, but it's like looking at it logically, objectively, and saying, really? Mm-hmm. No, you killed four people, Ethan Couch, right? You have to go to prison. Because if we're using it as a punitive thing, if we're for everyone, we have to apply it across the board. Otherwise, give Boo Boo, who, you know, had that weed bag 20 years ago, probation.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm sure that that person has a legitimate list of circumstances that led them to that moment where they ended up buying drugs, selling drugs, whatnot. Did you see the tips for beating affluenza in the research for this episode? I put them in the doc.
Yes, I did. On the PBS website, I did.
Yeah, yeah. We have to talk about these because while they're not bad tips, I will say, the cynic in me cannot help but look at them with a side eye, because it's like tips for beating affluenza, mama. Like, let's just
be
go to the
better.
Just maybe you don't need to be a bajillionaire. Let's start there.
And or like do something for somebody else. Think beyond yourself. You know?
So the first one says, before you buy, ask yourself, do I need it? Do I want to dust, dry clean, or otherwise maintain it? This is so...
You are not dry cleaning your own shit if you have...
No, you... And absolutely, you're wearing it one time and throwing it in the bin. Could I borrow it from a friend, a neighbor, or a family member? Ugh, it's not the same when you borrow someone else's boat. is there anything I already own that I could substitute for it? Are there resources that went into renewable or non-renewable? How many hours will I have to work to pay for it? Come on. Before you do this, you may find it hourly to figure out your real hourly wage. Take your... Not them talking to rich people like they are children.
Like holding your hand, telling you how, like, calculate how much you might have worked for it if you had to work for it.
Take your annual net income and subtract your work-related costs like clothing, transportation, childcare, parking, and lunches out. I'm sorry, no rich person is going to do this.
No, not at all. No. Number two is avoiding the mall. Avoid the mall. Go hiking and play ball with the kids instead.
First of all, rich people have personal shoppers and stylists.
Thank you.
They are not going to the mall with the brokies like us.
You know, can you carry Washington at the mall? No, sorry.
No.
Also, I'm I'm not avoiding the mall. I'm not rich, but I'm not avoiding the mall because the mall is where I get joy. Consumerism, I'm a capitalist at heart.
I mean, look, I would say the mall is a Let Me Fix It episode because the mall is dying.
The mall is dead. Amazon killed the mall. Amazon killed the mall.
Truly did. People are not going to brick and mortar stores the way that they used to. Another one on this list is figure out what public transportation can save you time. I believe that these are good, solid tips for being smart about your finances.
Yes.
But someone who has the potential to claim affluenza has a level of wealth that is so high.
Right.
There is no way they are going to take public transit.
They can't even say the word public transit.
They're like, literally.
I mean, I am somebody who has to take public transportation because I live in New York City, and I don't even want to take public transportation.
Seriously. But also, for all of MTA's flaws, the New York public transit is relatively easy to use. Like here in Los Angeles, we don't have public transit like that. We do have buses, but they come so infrequently. And Los Angeles is so spread out that it will take you more time to find the appropriate bus stop and then do all the transfers and all of that to get to where you're going to take like 2 hours to get where you're going. Traffic here is bad enough as it is, you know? So it's like making public transit accessible and usable is the first thing.
Right.
But for somebody who's ultra wealthy and doesn't want to freaking rub shoulders with the normies.
Also, if you have money, your car is a status symbol.
Right.
Right? Like, I guess I would rephrase this and say, get rid of two of your cars, right?
Do you need a private jet?
Thank you.
Do you need a helicopter? You can fly in first class.
Which also costs thousands of dollars.
Right. I mean, like, let's be real. It still costs money. But like, even when we're talking about freaking climate change, which is a whole nother topic. But like the amount of people who are taking up a private jet for one person to fly in. Nuts. One person, or even just doing a flight that's like a 20-30 minute flight, get in a car.
Absolutely.
Your driver take you there. Ridiculous.
I knew a guy, I went on a date with a guy who ordered an Uber from New York City to Connecticut. I said, what? And back, I mean, can you imagine if
that
Uber
driver? Take your ass on the Amtrak. The quiet car is wonderful.
Thank you. Take it. What's the Acela? You get a whole seat, buy both seats next to you so you don't have somebody next to you. Listen. An Uber all the way from New York, Connecticut. Anyway, back to this list because they get more ridiculous. This is number four. Become an advertising critic. Don't be sucked in by efforts to make you feel inadequate so you'll buy more stuff you don't need.
I mean, yes, like, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes, and that is one that I need to personally ingest because right now my finances are not where they used to be, but the Instagram ads will get me every time.
I dream about having them, right? I watch the Instagram ad. I'll go to your website. I mean, usually it's like something that looks like it's like $200 and it ends up being $30 and you know, don't buy that anyway.
It's not going to be the photo at all.
But about being an advertising critic, that assumes that like you can actually control what ads you're seeing, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm on Instagram, if I'm in the world, if I'm watching TV, I can't control what ads I'm seeing. And it requires like a divorcing from the indoctrination of how we consume TV, how we consume media. I guess be a critic, but you know, people gotta buy shit. And if I'm going to buy toilet paper and you tell me that Bounce is better, you know, I'm gonna get Bounce from my booty.
I am a sucker for good branding and good packaging. I will absolutely buy something because I'm like, ooh, look at this cute little logo. Like That's how people buy wine.
That's how you buy wine, isn't it?
It totally is. I'm like, oh my God, there's a line drawing of a dog holding a balloon. Sold.
Listen, you should sponsor us, Black Girl Magic, but I buy this Black Girl Magic wine and give it to people as gifts when I go to the house just because it says Black Girl Magic on it. Solely because of that. I haven't tasted the wine.
Rosé font. It's mm-hmm. gorgeous. It's so well cute. Done. But to your point, people, again, who have tons of money are not probably buying designer items and things because of an advertisement. They are buying the brand name, right? Like cachet that comes along with having What is that freaking the Birkin bag and like being on a list and all of that stuff? Like an advertisement is not making them buy those things. They're seeing their peers or other celebrities have it, and that's why they want it. And there's the exclusivity of it all. Mm-hmm. Okay. We also have on here, volunteer for a school or community group. Again, I agree. I like that one.
This one, I'll give them all the cookies for this one. Absolutely.
I think that one would curb people from, and it's that shitty thing of like remembering that there are people in this world who would be very happy to have a fraction of what you have. And it's sad that that's what it takes because people just don't have basic empathy and common sense, but I'm all for giving back. And you know, I love to tell rich people to spend money. So like, write a check. Well,
I guess like this is like the way to, tips for combating affluenza. It is the idea that like you don't see beyond your own circle. You can't see beyond your nose. You can't see beyond the money. So look, and it's so fucked up. It's like, go see a hungry kid, right? You see that commercial about the abused dogs or like the starving kids in some country. Go look at that and see that not everybody has that. And that gives you some perspective. To your point, it's very fucked up that you have
that you'd even need that, but it's like it could be a potential net positive.
Number six is splurge consciously. A few luxuries can be a delight and they don't have to be expensive. True.
they're not wrong. What was the last
expensive thing that you bought?
Ooh, Beyonce tickets. Twice.
Gave her all of your money.
Okay, so we've got a few more tips for avoiding affluenza. Number seven, stay in, have a potluck, play a game, bake bread, write a letter, cuddle a loved one.
Depression.
I mean, look, again, I don't disagree. And this is one that I've been really good about lately is like not eating out as much and like saying like, let's come hang out at my place. Let's chill by the pool. Let's go on a hike. Let's do things where we don't have to spend money. But again, the framing of this list does not feel like it's not speaking in like rich people language. Do you know what I mean? Yes.
This is like, to your point earlier, this is just common sense things to watch your budget.
And no rich person is going to watch that documentary and be like, you know what? I need to do more. Let me go on the PBS website.
Right. Speaking of watching your budget, number eight is make a budget. Know how much money you are earning and spending. Each dollar represents precious time in your life that you worked. Are you spending money in ways that fulfill you? Probably because, you know, there's that 20 minute rule. Like you buy something and you only get like the euphoria of buying it for the first 20 minutes. Have you ever heard that?
No, I've never heard that. Oh yeah, this
is
theory.
There's like, I think it's up to like $75,000. And they say it's either $75,000 or $7,500. After that benchmark, you don't get any additional joy from buying anything.
I believe it. And I would even say with this make a budget thing, if you are somebody who is wealthy enough that your wealth is keeping you from having basic empathy and common sense, having a budget and seeing how much you spend every month is not going to impact you.
Right.
You're just like, okay, great. I spent that much. The money's going to keep coming in. The people who budget are folks who don't know where their next paycheck is coming from, are worried about being able to make their bills every month. So like you're asking somebody who has an unlimited amount of money to care about their and real talk, a lot of people that have a lot of money have someone managing their money.
That's what I was just
going
to say. I have an accountant, right?
Right.
I mean, I do have an accountant, but I don't have money like that. I mean, like they have an accountant.
Right. But they have somebody who is like taking care of, you know, what stocks they're buying and things like that. And like their mortgage.
A portfolio.
I don't even know what a portfolio is, but they have one.
I thought it was something for your legal payout that you put in.
I thought it was a trapper keeper.
Totally.
No, it's not. I think it's like stocks and bonds.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like what all of the things where you put your money is that isn't actually like, you know, liquid cash.
Mm-hmm. All right. And last one, number nine, pretend the Joneses are the thriftiest, least wasteful people on the block, then try to keep up with them. PBS.
But they are the Joneses.
You're talking to the Joneses.
Okay. You missed it. You missed it, PBS.
I'm really disappointed in them.
I know. And I like give them money. Okay. Okay. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back for The Fix.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. So now it's time for The Fix, where we each pitch how we would rebrand Affluenza. Do you want to go first, Fran? How would you flex Affluenza?
Yeah, sure. I'm down to go first. So here's the thing. I do believe that being wealthy makes you out of touch with reality and can lead to unforeseen and even devastating circumstances. We've seen it time and time again. Ethan is not the first one. He will not be the last. My pitch is that if you are actually going to claim Affluenza as a legal defense, whether it be for DUI or insider trading or whatever it might be, I believe that you should have to pay reparations in addition to whatever legal consequences you face. So similarly to when you get child support payments and it comes out of your check every month, you should have a little Affluenza percentage that comes out of every check for a indeterminate amount of time in order for your to pay back. Your money is what got you in the situation. Your money's going to get you out. Let's give some of it away.
I really appreciate that, because it's like, not only are, if you're going to give somebody probation for something they did, okay, and here's the fine. It is this percentage that you have to pay to for restitution, you know?
Yes, because obviously Ethan is the example here we're using, but probation's not enough. You're still out here roaming these streets while four people are dead and one person is paralyzed from the neck down.
And violating the probation.
Who's paying that person's medical bills?
The hospital
bills.
Who's
making sure that they have a ramp to get into their home, because now they're in a fucking wheelchair because of you?
Right.
You should be paying for that.
Absolutely. And those people who lost a mother, a daughter, a father.
No amount of money is going to bring them back.
And that's the punitive thing that I'm interested in. Yeah.
Right.
No, take the money away.
Exactly. So another thing that I think that I've talked about before, but I think really applies here. Have you ever seen that show Undercover Boss?
I feel like I vaguely remember it, but I don't remind me.
It's one of those reality shows where the boss of a company goes in disguise and does one of the jobs at the company. I think a mandatory undercover boss type program should be available as soon as you reach a certain income bracket. So if you make X amount of dollars, you need to go do the lowest job at the company that you own or you're the CEO for, and you should see what it's fucking like to actually do the job that is putting money in your pocket. And that is especially relevant with the strikes.
Yes.
I see these studio bosses making all these choices and these decisions. Do y'all know what the job actually entails?
Right.
Do you know what it's like to live on the salary of the lowest person working for your business? I think everybody should have to, I think regardless of how much money you make, but once you hit a certain threshold, I think that that would be really helpful.
I agree with that. And I would also add that there's there's a substantive amount of time where you have to work that job. It's not like a one day thing.
No.
Because I was recently doing this research on Cabrini Green, which is the housing project in Chicago that got shut down. The mayor at the time, I forget her name, she went to go live in this really crime ridden housing project where obviously a lot of black and brown people lived. And it was a publicity stunt. She's like, oh, no, I'm going to go show you that people can live there. Right. And she went there and she lived there, I think for, it was like 13 days or maybe like 2 weeks. And the crime shot down because she had all of the police around her protecting her.
Right.
And then she was like, see, I can do it. What are you talking? Like, so it has to be a substantive amount of time. Like, spend 6 months in that housing project. Spend 6 months working at
full prosthesis. You need a nose. You need a sew-in. I don't want to recognize you while you're
sewing.
Yes, you need. That's the mayor. People knew she was the mayor when she
totally.
She wasn't actually undercover.
And she was a white lady around all these black people, like, obviously.
Exactly, exactly. And then my last pitch is also based on a reality show, something like the show Wife Swap, or almost like a foreign exchange type program for wealthy kids. I think, you know, when you're an adult, there is not that you can't learn or be reprogrammed or change your perspective, but so much is already ingrained in you. Mm. And I think that when you're a child, there's still a level of empathy
and hope
that hasn't been kind of like beaten out of you by like the world. And so giving young people an opportunity similar to that undercover boss type of thing, where they get to walk in somebody else's shoes and see what it's like to live in a different economic background or be from another country, so to speak. I think that that would be really helpful because, again, we need to start with the youth so that they don't grow into people who then take their wealth for granted.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. It's so funny. I didn't like look at your fix before this. And so it's so interesting because mine is like on par with your last one.
Yeah?
It's kind of like a little bit of a spin on it. My fix for affluenza is like a little controversial. So I'm just going to, it's a little political. I just want to like give you the softer, lighter Oprah Winfrey version before I go dive in.
I didn't look at yours either. So I'm ready.
So it's along the lines of whatever number that was in the PBS tips for curing affluenza list is just be of service, you know? And that's kind of like what we're talking about now. You want to cure the never-ending quest for more, find a way to serve your community or a community, right? Think beyond yourself, beyond your needs, and, you know, call yourself out. I call myself out right now. I don't do enough. I don't do enough for my community, but I'm part of communities. And I feel like I give money where I can, but I don't get my hands in there, you know? And I think that's something that's what I'm talking about. Find a way to look people in the eye, go to a food bank, go to work at a homeless shelter, volunteer your time. Okay. So now that that's the lighter version.
Oh my God. Okay.
Now my controversial fix for affluenza is mandatory unavoidable conscription.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about like, I'm talking about like in the Peace Corps, right?
Okay.
Very akin to what you were saying. I'm not out here, you know, saying that we have to join the armed services, but I'm saying take young people, like you said, and make them do required 2 years of service after high school. So it would be like
that.
A 13th and 14th year of school. It's almost like a betterment internship. You can be at a local organization. You can go in the armed forces if you'd like to, but also you can work in government. You can work in a transportation organization. You could work at a daycare, you know, but it's just about, and I'm saying across the board, not only affluent people, all of us should have to do 2 years of service.
Listen, you're right. This is a controversial pitch, but I really like it because, again, I think we've lost. This is one of the things I think about with the pandemic all the time is it was hard to convince people to wear masks because they were I don't want to do anything to help anybody else. People don't care about each other in this country.
Other people.
No, it's ridiculous.
And I mean, the other thing is like, I talk about capitalism a lot and I joke about being a capitalist and I very much am, but it's, we don't have a human part of capitalism. There's no like moral human center. Somebody always has to be at the bottom. And I feel like if we are all, to your point, if we're all working on the same level for a period of time, we're looking at people in the face, we're helping each other, you build that empathy that we've lost, you know?
Yeah, I love the idea of just encouraging people to care about their neighbors and care about those in different circumstances than they are in a holistic, tangible way.
Yeah.
Not just like a, you know, there are kids starving in that country. Make sure you eat your vegetables. Like, no, let's actually work with people who are in need, to your point, be of service to others.
Right.
Because it doesn't just help other people, it enriches yourself as well. And I think that at its core, that's what we're getting at with this affluenza thing, this idea that you are so far removed from the normal issues of the day,
right,
that you're out here doing things that are harming yourself and harming other people.
Well, and I don't believe in altruism in and of itself, because I do think when you give, when you do, you get just as much. Maybe mm-hmm. you don't realize it, but when I, you know, you're a great gift giver. Whenever you give me a gift, I know, like, you, the look on my face and, like,
I get
the appreciation.
I get off on it. Are you kidding?
It's a high.
I'm like, let me. I have to excuse myself.
It's a high, and so I think that give your money away, but also look somebody in the face and, again, go to a food bank and provide it to them, because you get just as much out of it, I think.
Oh, I love that. So it's now time for everyone's favorite segment, The Glow Up, where we give props to those who've turned themselves around without our help. Delon, why don't you go first?
Okay, my glow up this week goes to Lauryn Hill. She is notorious for being hours late to perform in her concerts. I mean, hours late. But she's going back on tour with the Fugees, and I'm intrigued. So Lauryn Hill recently announced the 25th anniversary tour to celebrate the miseducation of Lauryn Hill, with a global 17-date tour that will also include the Fugees members, and they're going across the United States and Canada, mm-hmm. and I really want to go. I think it's safe to say that, you know, we fell in love with Lauryn Hill after she starred in Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. She was arguably the breakout star from the film, but she followed that up with two albums with the Fugees, and we all know her iconic cover of, their iconic cover, I should say, of Killing Me Softly. If you were a kid growing up in the 90s or the early aughts, you know that entire bridge riff. Friend, I want us to do it.
You are listening like, these are singers?
Right. She was the breakout star with the Fugees, and then she went solo. We have to do a Let Me Fix It on that, because I still can't believe this woman had one album, clearly 25 years ago.
Well, she did, and she did have the Unplugged album, but it was
girl, the voice was rough.
It was odd. It was very strange.
Yeah. So, you know, my glow up goes to Lauryn Hill, because I was a huge fan. Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is still one of my favorite albums. We were in eighth grade when the Miseducation came out.
Ooh, so life-changing album.
Okay, we're old. But I can't believe she only had one. And I hope there's no new music coming out, because I'm a stan and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I hope she's able to make these dates. I'm just gonna be
honest.
I know,
you're right.
Because let me tell you, I wrote for Black Girls Rock, and we had Lauryn Hill perform.
That's right.
And we gave her a different time so that we would make sure she showed up, and then we filmed her rehearsal. Just in case she missed the live show and we could cut to the rehearsal. I mean, and it was a real thing. Everybody was like, we know she might not show up. That's and so I saw her at Afropunk, and she was late at Afropunk.
Wow.
She just, I don't know what it is. I will say my friend Dustin had a really funny joke that she was putting out a greatest hits album, and he was like, the album doesn't start till track 5.
Well, she did say she went to some concert. She was like 2 hours late. This is when it all started. One of the first concerts she was late to. And she was like, I had to get my energies aligned. Girl, my energies aren't aligned. My energy is dead because you didn't show up.
You are being paid to be here. This is not for funsies. I don't understand. You literally have one job, show up and sing. So I'm happy that she's going to go back on tour. She is iconic. That album deserves to be celebrated every day. 25 years is wild to me.
Crazy.
Lauryn, if you're listening, set the alarm earlier than you think you need to. Check the Google Maps. You could do an arrive-by time. It tells you what time you need to leave. You can pre-schedule the Uber Black. You can the day before. You really can.
You really can.
And I am claiming that for her. If you end up going, you know.
I will let you know. I mean, if the... We should go together. We should go together and just have like a let me fix it field trip and see what happens.
Oh my God, let me fix a field trip. I love this for us. Let's do it. All right. So my glow up this week goes to Brussels sprouts.
Oh.
Growing up, they were seen as stinky and disgusting. But in the last decade, they've really had this glow up, and deservedly so. I did my research and found out that the glow up is a scientific glow up. This is not just in our minds. Okay.
Really?
So the Brussels sprouts that we grew up with had a very bitter taste and stunk when you cooked them. But in the 1990s, a Dutch scientist named Hans von Dorn figured out what chemical was making Brussels sprouts taste so bitter. And then he started looking for different varieties that didn't have that same chemical. And then him and a bunch of scientists spent years mixing and matching and cross-pollinating these Brussels sprouts to come up with the ones that we now know.
Wow.
So we are eating biracial Brussels sprouts.
Oh, shut up.
We are eating mixed greens.
I hate you so much.
So after they came up with this new tasty Brussels sprout, word spread, professional chefs around the world started picking up on them. More in the US than Europe, because in Europe, everyone was like, no, you not changing our minds about Brussels sprouts. People would not, they would put them on the menu and people would not order them.
Like really? People,
they were just convinced that they were going to be disgusting. But once the word got out about the least favorite vegetable from childhood tasting a little bit differently, a lot of big name chefs and 5-star restaurants started incorporating them and cooking with them again. And now the demand for them is booming. Farmers are getting 4 to 5 times more money than they did a decade ago for Brussels sprouts.
Listen,
isn't that amazing?
It's insane. I didn't know. I mean, science. God love science.
I didn't know either. I was literally just like, I like Brussels sprouts now. And then I did a Google search and found this NPR article that said, from culinary dud to stud, how a Dutch plant breeders built our Brussels from sprouts boom. Like, what?
He needs to do that shit with okra, because I know you love some fried okra out here, but that shit is nasty. I like
fried okra. You don't like
no,
it?
No, I know. They're going to take my black card away. No, I don't like, I don't like fish either. So fried okra and catfish is just like not my thing.
Yeah. And fried okra is kind of like slimy.
It's
well, the
slimy.
Inside slimy. Yeah.
And they're like, just put some ketchup on it. And I'm like, girl, no. I will say those European chefs, all they had to do was put some maple bacon on those Brussels sprouts and people would tear it up.
I mean, here's the thing. I definitely remember Brussels sprouts of my childhood stinking to high heavens. And so I don't know that maple bacon would have changed it. They really were in here mixing and matching and doing a little, you know, test tube babying on the sprouts.
No, I mean, like, you know, when the Europeans wouldn't eat it, if those chefs had just put like it's a maple bacon on there, bacon makes everything taste good. Give
it's
it to
true.
Me.
It's true. And you know about me, I love a sweet and a meat. Give me that maple bacon.
Okay. Well, friends. go ahead.
Well, friends, that is our show. And now we want to hear from you. Do you think affluenza is pseudoscience, or do you think it is a legitimate thing and thus makes for a good legal defense? Or maybe you want to suggest a TV show, a celebrity, or a brand that you think we should fix in a future episode? Please hit us up on Instagram at FixItPod.
And as always, if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Francesca.
I'm DeLon.
And this was Let Me Fix It.
Let Me Fix It.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.